Hello, and thank you for tuning into this week's history episode of Bite Size Cybercrime, the podcast where we talk about cybercrimes, malware, and vulnerabilities of the past. Typically, we cover news, but I do occasionally like to bring up an older case because it's often still very relevant to the modern day. This week's episode is about the storm worm. However, the storm worm isn't actually a worm. A worm is a type of malware that is able to spread on its own. And although the worm was spread via email, it's actually more of a Trojan horse. A Trojan horse, or Trojan for short, is malware that spreads by disguising itself as something else, like legitimate software. In this case, the stormworm disguised itself as a news article embedded in an email. It's called the stormworm because it essentially used clickbait news titles to entice people into opening the articles. The most common one being 230 dead as storm batters Europe. But other variants also spread, such as Fidel Castro dead, FBI versus Facebook, US occupies Iran, naked teens attack home director, and a bunch of other articles that are either very major news events people were awaiting, or just absurd. All of these were email subject lines, where the attachment that contained the stormworm itself was usually called something like fullvideo.exe, fullstory.exe, readmore.exe, something that you may reasonably expect to see in a news article to read a full story. After all, I'm on several cybersecurity newsletters. Often when I receive emails, there is a link back to the website. After all, typically you would just get the title and a bit of a preview of the news story and need to click off-site anyways. It being an attachment, though, is rather strange, although in 2007, plenty of people just opened attachments without thinking too much of it, so this may not have been too uncommon either. There was no full story, or at least the story is kind of the least of the victim's concerns. When the attachment was opened, a backdoor was installed on the PC. This allows whoever made the Trojan to access the victim's machine whenever they want. The malware was actually pretty resilient and ahead of its time, because the code would change every 10 minutes or so to avoid detection from antiviruses, and the IP of the servers that it would beacon out to communicate with the malware operator, would also change, making it difficult to pinpoint a location. These are both very common methods nowadays to obfuscate the origins of malware, and it's really interesting seeing this be used as far back as 2007, when the stormworm was initially discovered. Although, there is a good chance it was around for longer than that, simply unnoticed. Although the origin of the stormworm was never traced to any specific people, there is some evidence that it is of Russian origin. In an archived PC Magazine article, according to Finnish security firm F-Secure, it appears as though the domain was hosted through the Russian Business Network, which was a multifaceted cybercrime organization located in Russia. The RBN has also been notorious for hosting many illegal businesses, including phishing, spam, and malware distribution, and even more illicit websites. Another thing that is notable about the stormworm is that it was used to create a large botnet, rather than to directly harm the victim by messing with files. A botnet is a network of machines infected by malware that can be controlled to perform certain actions. Botnets are commonly used for distributed denial of service, or DDoS, attacks. A distributed denial of service attack is when many machines, hundreds, thousands, potentially millions, all flood a website or other servers with requests. So many requests that the website cannot provide content for actual people trying to use it. You may think that something like this would be controlled centrally, with all the zombie machines communicating to one central server hosted by the malware operator, but that was actually not the case. Rather, each compromised machine would actually connect to a different compromised machine that was chosen to be a host. And although these hosts connected to other hosts, no host had the total control over the entire botnet. This makes it really difficult to track the operator behind this, since it's very scattered, and it also makes it hard to figure out just how many machines were actually infected. Just because you get one host doesn't mean you're going to get anywhere near the total amount of machines that are infected. By September 7, 2007, it was estimated between 1 and 50 million computers were infected, which is a very wide range. Compared to most malware at the time, where the creators were looking to cause destruction, chaos, or just get attention, the Stormworm was much more careful and subtle. It wasn't easily noticed. It spread slowly so not to cause performance issues. The botnet that it created was fractured and hard to completely discover or destroy. The code of the malware itself was frequently morphed to evade detection, and it actually targeted any websites that tried to inform people of its existence. It even attacked and would take down systems that would scan for it. This made it a very big problem for cybersecurity professionals to deal with it at the time, as you couldn't even research it without being attacked by an army of zombie computers trying to shut you down. And what else did the botnet do? Part of the botnets were actually for sale and could be used by other hackers to pull off different types of attacks. This is why there was so much focus on making the botnet as big and strong as it could be. The creators were making money off of it by charging others to leverage it. This actually reminds me a lot of modern-day ransomware models, where one ransomware gang makes malware and then seeks out affiliates to actually perform the attacks for them, and then they make a cut of the ransom paid. In January 2008, the Stormworm and its botnet were detected to be involved in phishing attacks against the customers of major financial institutions in Europe. This effort was made to steal bank account credentials and drain money from those accounts. But beyond that, there could really be all kinds of attacks we don't know about that the Stormworm was behind. When Microsoft security began to improve and antivirus got better at detecting malware, the Storm botnet and the Trojan itself began to shrink massively. Eventually, it just faded into obscurity, and better, more efficient malware would take its place. It's not really known how long the Stormworm and the Storm botnet have been around, or if they're still hidden somewhere out there on older systems. But you're pretty much never going to have to worry about that specific malware these days. Thank you to fsecure.com, Seclists, The Register, IRS Technica, and Dark Reading for information on the Worm, the botnet, the Brigade Against Anti-Spam Websites and Cyber Researchers, and this being sold. Having all this information available in retrospect is what makes these older cases really fascinating to me, and I hope you enjoyed this episode as well. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Bite-Size Cybercrime. My name is Chloe Tonis, and until next time, stay secure.